Hello and welcome to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with you every Tuesday at noon and Friday at 6 to answer questions large and small. Somehow there aren't any small ones lately, but that's okay. We're here to talk big today. We're talking about climate change and geoscience, and I am privileged to have here with me in the studio Greg Wessel, who is the founder of Geology in the Public Interest. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you.
And Mark Kickling, who is a VOV video producer and who also attended what we're going to talk about, and that was the Geoscience and Society Summit in Stockholm, Sweden in March. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
And I need to let everyone know that you're listening to the voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington, your island connection. Okay, guys. So you attended, actually, Greg, you founded and started the Geoscience and Society Summit in March. Why did you do that?
Well, I can't take total responsibility for that because it was a team effort, certainly. But it was an idea that we had probably 4 or 5 years ago to bring together a group of people to talk about building bridges, because society is so fractured now, and geoscientists have a reason to collaborate, not just with themselves, but with other groups to promote sustainable global development and redevelopment. So the idea was to figure out some new ways to come together and build some bridges so that we could work together more effectively and more efficiently.
When you talk about geoscientists, give our listeners an idea of exactly who those scientists are, what fields those scientists might have come from.
Well, actually, it's just about any field having to do with earth studies. So I'm a geologist, a fairly vanilla-flavored, standard, meat and potatoes kind of geologist. And there are lots of other people like me out there. But we're also talking with climate scientists and health people, public health, anybody having to do anything with the earth's surface, and even subsurface and atmosphere. So it ends up being a large group of people. When we talk about geoscientists, it's really earth scientists and earth in the wider scale.
And you held this in Stockholm, so I'm going to guess that the scientists came from around the world. How many different countries were represented?
I think we had 20 different countries.
Wow.
Represented, and out of about 70, 75 people, I think, total attended. So we had a pretty good contingent from the U.S., as you might expect. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of people from the U.K., and then, of course, Sweden, and then people scattered from across Europe down into Africa, some from Asia, one guy from Ukraine, and a woman from Mexico City. So it was and Canadians, and so it was quite a diverse group, and actually all different disciplines as well, not just geoscientists, because we had invited theologians, people representing the community of faith, and we had represented health scientists, so public health people, educators. We had some excellent speakers there from school district in New Jersey, and it was really amazing to see everyone come together and talk about the same topic, which was how do we address climate change and the other global challenges that we face.
How many days did this conference last?
It was designed to last about 4 days, but 3 days, I think, mainly of meetings, and the first one was pretty much fluff, just getting together.
It looked like heavy drinking to me.
Heavy drinking. There was a lot of yogurt, as I recall, and Danishes. I'm sorry, pastries.
So there were Swedishes.
Sweet, yeah. Yeah, that's so. It was really actually very good. We had a fun time. Mm. And very good venue and excellent hosts. So it really went well, I thought. But yeah, we had quite a few people from all over the world.
So what came out of it?
Well, we had, so what happened is that we went through a series of workshops. There were 5 altogether, and we had come up with questions for everyone to consider, discussion questions. It was very discussion interactive intensive. And at the end of each workshop, then the results from that one, or the ideas that came out of that one, were to feed into the next one. the audience of the participants were broken up into I think four groups, and they each worked independently and then came together at the end. And the final workshop was to kind of summarize the main concerns and brainstorm on what to do and how to fix things. So the questions, there was a lot to talk about in a short period of time.
I bet.
I mean, it was
saving the planet.
And it, right. And everybody coming from different disciplines and different locations, everybody had their own take on it. So we ended up with a lot of notes that listed things that should be done.
Mark, can you summarize the list of things that they came up with? You were there as a news reporter, essentially, weren't you?
Well, I cannot actually summarize that because my view of it was, I don't think it was completely collated and finished at the time that I finished shooting the video. I think that collation took place afterwards, didn't it?
That actually, it's taking place now as
okay,
well.
Yeah.
We have a lot of notes to pore over, and we have a conference call scheduled for tomorrow morning with the program committee.
But what I do have is I have live action video of this melee taking place when all of the scientists and policymakers are running around with colored post-its attaching them to the wall as they organize this just scattershot of thoughts. And so you had a big job.
Yes, it was. It was. It's overwhelming, really. It's it's quite intimidating, and I was exhausted at the end, as I think a number of the other people were too. But we did come up with some themes that were important.
Can you tell us about those?
Sure. There were a couple. One was that the need for improved communications across the board, everywhere with everyone, all the time,
as in globally,
and locally as well. And this is. The intent being to get geoscience more into the mainstream, to bring it into the realm of where people can actually use it better.
When you say getting geoscience more into the mainstream, are you talking climate action?
Yes, we are.
Okay.
Actually, we are. And trying to influence it at the local level. That's correct.
Okay.
That which was another theme that came out of it, the importance of local action.
Oh, that's good to know.
Another was the need for increased education. And principally, that came in the grade schools and middle schools, but also adults who are in charge now and the general public. But really, it's education was probably most important to the younger people. That, I think, was the conclusion that our educators reached.
When you talk about education, are you saying education regarding the science of climate change? So that people begin to understand and grasp the enormity and or the potential individual action they can take?
Yes, all of the above. And to appreciate the science that's already been done and to build on it and to use that in daily life. That's, I think, is the biggest challenge, is trying to get people to change their way of living. Because it's a huge problem.
It is a huge problem. Did you come up with any ideas about that? How to get people to change the way they live?
In a sense, we did. And it's really still being developed as we go through this. It's quite a challenge to take all of these ideas that people had and put them together in some form that you can generate actionable items.
Mm-hmm.
But there are two things. We might look at taking this show on the road and coming up with another meeting format that's different that allows us to reach out to people around the world in places where people couldn't afford to come to this meeting, for example, and look for their input and also help them develop their local approaches to sustainability and resilience. So there's that kind of it's almost a missionary aspect of it, you know, where we're going out saying, here's what we can do to help, but we need your direction as well. I mean, we're looking for input from everyone, which we tried to get at this meeting, but because it was in Northern Europe, and we didn't have any funding to assist travel, we did get some people, but not that many from the developing world.
So if you were to take it on the road, then you would take it to the developing world to communicate with organizations there and local communities?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So cities like La Paz, Bolivia, maybe Jakarta, there's a Nairobi, places like that we might go.
Mm. So. With the ideas that you came, that came out of this summit, would your messages to each of those countries be somewhat different? When we talk about we have to change the way we live, is that going to be the same in every one of those countries?
No, it's going to be very different. I think we have to hold to the same standards, in that we have to raise the standards so that we live in a more sustainable fashion wherever we are.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look at full cost accounting, for example. But it's going to be different everywhere you go. And it's always local applications that are important, provided those standards, the same standards, are met. In some places, it's a whole lot easier to meet those standards, especially if there isn't much development to begin with. Then it's pretty easy. The hardest place to apply this is going to be right here in the United States.
No surprise.
And that's one of the places where not many people are working at it just yet. So, I mean, they have a lot of people here on Vashon interested in that, obviously. But you actually look for real approaches, or rather real action that's been taken to do it. And boy, it's a whole lot easier to find evidence of that in India than it is here.
That's humbling. Yes, Mark.
It's going to require some pretty massive changes in lifestyle and technology and things like that. We are, of all of the nations, the ones who produce the greatest amount of carbon dioxide per capita, because there's 350 million of us and we produce a great deal of carbon dioxide. You just do the math and we look pretty bad on the global scale. Even though we are reducing this somewhat, we still have to get to, well, it was Jeffrey Sachs, one of your keynote speakers, who said we have to decarbonize the environment and get down to zero fossil fuels by 2050. That's big.
That is big.
That's true. That's right.
Mm.
What were the surprises that came out of this? I think when you say zero fossil fuels, one of the things that I've recently learned is that it isn't just cars that are emitting carbon dioxide. Airplanes are among the worst.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
And for some of us, we just don't think about that.
And that's right. And here we have a meeting in Stockholm that requires flying halfway around the world. So, yeah, we have to look at our air travel, our meat consumption, and a number of other things that are very basic to our approach to what we do today, just have to be changed entirely.
We being Americans.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Other surprising things. Well, one thing that I found really interesting, and that came from our educators, is that the importance of scalability. That if you have an idea for something to do in your community, and it's a scalable idea, then that's a real success. That you can actually apply it over a wider area or adapt it to other communities that are very different from yours. So I thought that was great. I loved that part. Another thing that came up was the importance of having higher standards, as I mentioned. That, I think, was pretty much universally accepted as we're just not doing enough. No matter how much we're doing now, where we're doing it, what we're doing, it's not enough, and we have to raise our standards.
How will we know when it is enough?
I really don't know. It's going to be through a ratcheting of policy over an extended period of time that we affect these lifestyle changes in ways that people can live with them. You know, cleaner air standards, lower carbon dioxide emissions, perhaps less air conditioning or different air conditioning, and all sorts of across the spectrum. Everything needs to be just ratcheted.
Was there any discussion from anyone about incentivizing big business to change their ways? And I'm thinking of energy companies, even companies that produce technology, that produce the hardware, that kind of thing. Was there any discussion of incentivizing them from either a taxing or a consumer perspective to do it differently?
Not that I heard. I moved around from workshop to workshop.
Right.
But we did have some representatives there from the fossil fuel industry, including one of our facilitators.
Oh, great.
Who was excellent at his job, and I actually ended up sharing an apartment with him and two other geologists. So I got to talk with him a lot. And there were some others from the fossil fuel industry there as well.
Mm.
It was a sensitive topic for them. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine,
mm-hmm.
The fossil fuel industry, oil companies are addressing this to a degree, but they still have to maintain a cash flow, or they want to maintain a cash flow and operate basically as they have before. So we really haven't gone down that road yet.
I want to let our listeners know that you are listening to Real Talk on the Voice of Vashon at 101.9 FM, KVSHLP, Vashon Island, Washington. We're talking about the summit in Stockholm this March, Geoscience and Society, founded by our own Greg Wessel and attended and covered by our own Mark Hickling. We can do this thanks to the generosity of Windermere Vashon Real Estate, who make all our community information programming and our emergency alert service possible. When you say, Greg, we haven't gone down that road, how big is that road? That road being the one to major industry to try and convince them or incentivize them to do what's better for the earth.
Well, I don't think it's that they don't already know that there's a benefit to that. This is something that they've been approached with for a long time by many others. We actually, in this case, we're kind of the latecomers to this project. So you do have oil companies who have looked at solar energy in the past and still are, and alternative fuels and biofuels and all that. It always is a small portion of their total portfolio.
I have a feeling that the European Union as a whole is further down the tracks in establishing policy changes. And I had an interesting second interview, or I produced a second video that is up on the Voice of Vashon on Climate Watch page. And this was a deep dive interview with a professor at Stockholm's University on atmosphere. And he made a very strong point about that corporations globally would be quite satisfied with changes in policy and the rules of the game because it allows them to simply factor all of that into their business models and to make long-range plans. And if it's a level playing field for all of them, that's fine. So that could be on heating and air conditioning. It could be on commute patterns. It could be on electricity usage, all that stuff.
You mean he thought that global industries would be willing change their practices? If they're told.
If they're told.
In Sweden.
If there are rules. No, not just Sweden. All across the European Union.
Huh.
And here too.
I think I would agree with that. I think the difficulty in applying them in this country is that there's no one to tell them to do that.
Right.
Except the shareholders. And so it's all about short-term gain, not long-term impact.
True. That's been the American model. Tell us, Greg or Mark, what other surprises or what other ideas came out of the summit?
Well, one of the things that I had a sort of a number of aha moments and big takeaways for me. One was an interview that I did that is on video in the video that I shot of you over there, Greg, and that was really Dr. Lawrence Diko Makia from he was a professor from South Africa, and he really pointed out that it's the northern hemisphere that produces most of the carbon dioxide that is changing the climate of the Earth, but most of the burden he felt was being felt in Africa with water scarcity, drought, food security issues. And he pointed out that when the United States, for instance, withdraws from the Paris Accord, it demoralizes. Even as he called it, the common man, the fella who might be charged with going out to test the water in the wells or to help initiate policy in South Africa and places like that. So he made really made me open up my eyes to the fact that this is a hugely global problem and that we all have to join together in a global community.
If only we could unite all the nations to understand that this is a threat to us all and a common enemy we should all join to fight. What about the notion of regenerative agriculture? Did that come up at all? It's an idea that I've heard from the Savory Institute and from Joel Salatin in on the eastern side of the United States about using animals, large herd animals and different and permaculture farming to basically sequester carbon in the earth. Did any of that come up?
Yes, that was mentioned in several of the workshops. We actually went through quite a list of things that we should be doing as a species, really, not just as American citizens, but as a species, what we should be doing to address this issue. And that was definitely one of the things that people talked about. Our challenge with this particular conference was how to arrange our work and our interaction to be more effective than it is now. And so we have all these tools. That's one of the tools that we have in our toolkit. So how do we get people to do it? And how do we actually expand our influence in that world?
Did they come up with any great ideas for that?
Well, you know, taking the show on the road is one.
Mm-hmm.
We also talked somewhat briefly at the end in the last workshop about establishing a new digital platform that would allow people to interact. Now, this is a little complex, but it's kind of like, in my head, it's kind of like a train station where online you walk into the, I don't know if you've ever been to Union Station in Cincinnati. It's a huge, well, lots of train stations. There's a huge big room where everybody sits.
Uh-huh. Right?
And then you see your ticket salesmen's around the side and then salesmen, and then you see hallways that say to the X trains or to the Philadelphia or wherever, you know. And so it would be kind of like that, where you would go in and then you would find a menu of all different things that are available, including resources, things where you can learn from, resources for teachers, for example, and for communities and local governments. I think it's pretty important for local governments to address this, and they have some ability to make some real change. And then other ways to interact, including standards that we would promote, a higher standards. So that's a possibility, but it's a major organizational challenge. And I think it's an easy one, actually, when you sit back and look at it. But from this perspective right now, it's like, oh boy, we're going to do that.
Is that something the Geology and the Public Interest Organization would take on? Or is that something that would come out of this Geoscience and Society Summit, like creating a new organization that pulls all these global interests together to fight climate change?
Yeah, I don't think we need a new organization to do that. I just think we need a committee of people from those groups that already sponsored the Geoscience and Society Summit, which includes 10 groups. So, and then we could put that together and basically make it an open, you know, any community, any group like Rondi Lightmark's whole Vashon catalog could post a page in that. And, you know, any community with a good idea could get into that and see what resources there were to help them, as well as what ideas they had to share.
So it's a virtual meeting room where people can share ideas and apply them in their own local communities. Mm-hmm.
Correct. That's right.
Nice idea.
We need a lot of it.
We do. What I'm thinking about your personal feelings now. When each of you left this summit, how did you feel? What did you walk away with?
Well, for me, I left with the conviction that I want to dedicate myself to, as a producer, as a reporter, covering this beat for some considerable period of time to get the word out on this stuff, which is why I started this Climate Watch department with Voice of Ashen. And
just to elaborate on that a little bit more, Mark, tell people what there is and how they can get there.
Well, if you go to the Voice of Ashen website and to the shows button on the menu, click that open, you'll see Climate Watch, and you'll see the first two videos that are up there that explore causes and effects of climate change, but also some of the things that people on Vashon might do to mitigate, to deal with it, to reduce these effects. And so these first two videos were kind of long. I'm going to be able to do some shorter single-person videos where we come in on particular ideas or particular creations or inventions or trials and things that are going on Vashon. Just give them some visibility. Come in close and take a look and talk to the people about those, and maybe make some 5 or 6 minute videos, 10 minute videos, that kind of thing.
Informative things on climate change and climate action. You know, King County and not a few others have recognized that Vashon is the perfect petri dish for climate change projects, testing, that kind of thing. So a good laboratory for what folks might be able to do in other communities. What about you, Greg? How did you feel when you left that summit?
Exhausted. at the end of it, after the last workshop, I was exhausted and somewhat intimidated by the amount of the number of ideas and sticky notes that we had to look at to address and try to summarize all of it and put it together. And I've been working on it for some time, distracted by other issues, but getting back to it now. And so we'll see some more progress from it, particularly after our conference call tomorrow. But I was lucky. I was lucky at the very end to be involved with it. I thought it was probably the greatest thing I'd ever been a part of.
Yeah.
You know, in my career, I've done some really interesting things, interesting to me, but this was really good. And I was also lucky because Mark had said, you know, when you're done with this, how about if I take you for a day and we just tour around the city? And so I was looking forward to that.
We had a good time.
We did. We had a great time. Yeah.
What stood out for you the most from the summit?
I think for me, it was that we've got a lot of different people out there in a lot of different countries and from all different disciplines who basically are on the same page. And trying to connect with them is our challenge. We had such diversity in our audience. But if you ask these people the question of, you know, is this important? Do we need to do something about it? Every single one of them would have said yes in the same way. And so that's what struck me, is that we were all there. We all came together from our own little realms, our own experiences, and very different situations, and yet we all came with the same ideas, really.
That's a really hopeful summary.
And I think it's something that is really hard to talk about in the media. You know, you don't see that. It's like, no, there's a lot of people out there who really want to do something. And the challenge is, what? What do you do? You know, and I think at the local level, that's especially a challenge because you still have to go to work on the ferry, you still have to go in your car, you still have to, you know, it's not easy to change that.
Yeah, we haven't set things up to be kind to the environment.
No, and how do you change that in a massive way in a short period of time, especially with leaders, and I put that in quotation marks, who basically are trying to take you in another direction.
We have 1 minute left. Either one of you, what would you like to leave people with? Can they find out about the results of the summit online somewhere?
Not yet, but if they send me their email address or send me an email to either of us, I guess we can put them on a mailing list and keep them involved. We will need some public support.
Give us those email addresses really quick.
Mine is my last name, which is Hickling, Hickling. Hickling on the road at hotmail.com.
And Greg?
Mine is G Wessel, that's GWESSEL, at public geology, spelled out, no spaces, .org.
Thank you. Thank you both. And thank you for listening to Real Talk. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with you every Tuesday at noon, Friday at 6, to seek answers to questions large and small. Have a wonderful week.